Our guest is George Grant, who has written a book entitled Grand Illusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood. George, welcome again to Truths That Transform.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you once again, Bob.
Now, you have written several books, and I'm just curious, why did you pick Planned Parenthood as a topic?
Well, it wasn't actually a topic that I wanted to write on, although I thought for a very long time that someone really needed to do a book on Planned Parenthood. After all, here is an organization that is the number one provider of abortion and birth control services in the world, and there had never been a really comprehensive, in-depth expose dealing with the history and all of the various and sundry activities of the organization. I just kept waiting and waiting for someone to do the big expose or just an in-depth study of the organization. And it wasn't forthcoming. Then, providentially, God dropped into my lap through the agency of a number of dedicated pro-lifers just a ton of information, literally over 100,000 different documents, from internal memorandum to case histories to files on clients to financial information and so forth, that had actually been thrown away at a Planned Parenthood clinic. These pro-lifers had retrieved it and brought it. I started thumbing through the stuff, and I was so amazed at what I saw that I began to do some serious study, and ultimately that led to the book. The book is not based primarily upon those documents, but that really became the springboard for me to do some serious investigation and a lot of research and study. And the book is the result of that.
Now, with the prominence of Planned Parenthood, and I mentioned we've talked about them several times in different issues, why do you suppose that no one tackled this before?
Well, there are a lot of things. First of all, Planned Parenthood has an incredibly good reputation. And so while there have been people who have felt negatively toward Planned Parenthood for a long time, especially in the pro-life movement since 1973, most of the people who have hurled attacks at Planned Parenthood have kind of had wild-eyed approaches and almost been hysterical. And so there's not been a lot of serious study by those who are predisposed to not like Planned Parenthood. Those who do like Planned Parenthood aren't really predisposed to displaying their history, because it's a pretty sordid history. And so there's that side. And then those who might be inclined to do a real serious study that's balanced and has a good deal of research probably have shied away in the past, because we live in a very litigal society, and the threat of being sued by a multi-billion dollar international organization is it's not a thrilling thought. And so it's possible that some have shied away a bit because of that. Perhaps, though, the biggest reason why a systematic study of Planned Parenthood has never been done before, this is what I ran into as I began the research, is Planned Parenthood is actually not one organization. It is, in fact, over 200 different separately incorporated organizations, corporations all over the country, and then another 200, 250 around the world. Each one has its own board of directors. Each one has its own organizational structure. Each one has its own approach to financing. Each one has its own philosophical orientation. And so it's a very disparate kind of movement, and that's really difficult to get a handle on. And so it's not an easy subject to tackle.
But in trying to define Planned Parenthood and all of these organizations for our audience who may not be familiar at all, how would you define the organization?
Well, Planned Parenthood is an organization about 70 years old that focuses all of its energy and efforts on sex education, on birth control and contraception, and on abortion services. It is the world's largest provider of these services in the world. It has a unifying philosophical approach. It has a number of unifying federations, both national, local, and international, that tie all of these various organizations together as a federation of worldwide Planned Parenthood movements. And so if you really want to just get a snapshot picture of what Planned Parenthood is, think about the sexual revolution and think about the sex education movement, think about school-based clinics, think about abortion clinics and the battle for abortion rights in the United States, and you will think primarily about the activities and the functions of Planned Parenthood worldwide. They are at the forefront of all of those battles.
Now, why do you think Planned Parenthood has been able to grow from a small New York clinic to this massive conglomerate in just a short time?
Well, you cannot discount the fact that the founder of Planned Parenthood, a woman by the name of Margaret Sanger, you can't discount the fact that she was absolutely brilliant. She knew exactly what she was doing. She was a driven, passionate woman, believed completely and totally in her cause, and spent her life literally doing little else than promoting the Planned Parenthood scheme. As a result, she was met with great success. She also had a tremendous knack for attracting money. Planned Parenthood, through the agency of Margaret Sanger, was able to attract Carnegie money, Roosevelt money, Rockefeller money, Ford and Carnegie money, Mellon money, Astor money. Ultimately was able to go around the globe and meet heads of state and initiate Planned Parenthood programs in the Far East and in Europe and in Africa. She was just a tremendously successful, brilliant woman. And I would have to say that the success of Planned Parenthood early on has to be directly attributable to this one woman. Now, since that time, Planned Parenthood has attracted a number of professionals from all different fields and has drawn on the strengths of the most brilliant and passionate people in the left to promote its cause. And so all of these things kind of taken together have pushed Planned Parenthood to the forefront and made it what it is today, the leader in leftist causes when it comes to family life and education and media and so forth.
Focusing on Margaret for a moment, what were the goals that drove her onward? Why was she so involved in promoting this philosophy?
Well, early on, Margaret was involved in a number of radical causes. She grew up during a time of social foment and turmoil in the United States, an era that has been dubbed the progressive era. In the early teens and on into the 20s in our history, there were a number of radical movements that grew up, and Margaret was associated with most of those radical movements. Everything from international socialism and communism. She was a paid communist agitator at one time, believe it or not. She was involved with the International Workers of the World, which was a Marxist labor union movement that was doing really phenomenal things in cities in the Northeast and on through the Midwest. She therefore had this passion for revolution. A revolution, a social revolution, not necessarily a bloody revolution, but a revolution of ideas that would bring into being in the United States what her ideal would be, and that is the kind of socialism that was being developed in the Soviet Union at the time and also in Germany at the time. So she was really driven in that regard. Another strain in her thought was what is called eugenics. Essentially what eugenics was a pseudoscience that focused on the gene pools of different races. Eugenicists believed that certain races were undeveloped and underdeveloped because of a poor gene composition. And therefore, in order to enhance the evolutionary advance of mankind, what scientists needed to do was to encourage reproduction among those advanced races and discourage reproduction and even eliminate those backward races. So, for instance, most eugenicists were incredibly, incredibly racist in the modern sense of it. In the early documents of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger talks about human weeds. And these human weeds are blacks, Hispanics, Southern Europeans, Slavs, Jews, even Catholics, which, as we know, Catholics aren't a race. They are people of faith. And yet she considered those people, because she had a very strong anti-Christian bias, she was involved in the occult and theosophy and unity and several other things. She felt like that if a person was a Christian, that was a demonstration that they had bad genes. And so Planned Parenthood originally was devised as a combination of these two strains in her thought: revolutionary socialism, an attack on capitalism and the structure of the economy, and on the other hand, an attack on these inferior races to limit the reproduction of blacks, Hispanics, Slavs, Southern Europeans, and so forth.
Now, are Margaret Sanger's ideas that we've been talking about still apparent in Planned Parenthood today?
Well, you know, obviously Planned Parenthood is a very sophisticated and cosmopolitan organization. It is also rooted in what Herbert Schlossberg in his marvelous book, Idols for Destruction, calls egalitarian humanitarianism. And so you don't hear them saying racist things. Now, Margaret Sanger was involved with a number of Hitler's social engineers in Nazi Germany. For instance, Dr. Ernst Rudin, who was Hitler's director of the euthanasia program, wrote for Planned Parenthood journals. And Dr. Lothrop Stoddard, who was a eugenicist from the United States but was closely allied with Nazi Germany in a number of things, and wrote a book that was reviewed favorably in the Planned Parenthood journal entitled White World Supremacy and the Threat Against It. And these kinds of things were very predominant and open in the early days. Margaret Sanger developed something in the 40s called the Negro Project, and the design of the Negro Project was to limit reproduction among blacks in the South in the United States, and to introduce the ideas of birth control, contraception, and abortion so that ultimately she could eliminate the black race. Today, Planned Parenthood is not that blatant. However, when you read carefully with a mind attuned to these things kind of in the background, you do see subtle hints that these philosophies still predominate. For instance, you can't help but, when you're reading Planned Parenthood literature, see the constant emphasis that is made on the burden of the poor in the United States, on the taxpayer, on the middle class, and so forth. So we're taught to think in Planned Parenthood literature that the poor, and particularly the minority poor, are a drain on society. And so Planned Parenthood organizes its campaigns and develops its projects and programs in minority neighborhoods. When you think about school-based clinics, you're not thinking about clinics in white, upper-middle-class, suburban high schools. You're thinking about clinics in the inner cities, in minority schools, designed to limit reproduction in those schools. Now, Planned Parenthood says, well, of course, that's where the most need is, and that's why we're there. And yet, their own statistics show that the rate of teen pregnancy and the rate of sexually transmitted diseases in public high schools in America today is higher and growing faster in those white, upper-middle-class suburban schools by a rate of almost 2-to-1 than in those minority schools. So when you look at all of the things that Planned Parenthood is doing racially, you see that subtle undercurrent of racism is still there. As far as the socialism side of it, in 1984, the Wall Street Journal asserted that Planned Parenthood's love affair with socialism continued unabated. And you'll see them taking the side of the left, the radical left, the labor movement left, the socialist legislators and so forth, without fail, time after time after time. So we have to say that even though Margaret Sanger's philosophies were much more blatant than Planned Parenthood's statements are today, they continue unabated. And on top of it, Planned Parenthood has never distanced themselves from Margaret Sanger. She is still the patron saint of the organization. And when you look at any of their literature, her image is splashed all over it, photograph after photograph after photograph, and quotation after quotation after quotation. And they will defend her vehemently. So as much as they try and say that they're not the racist organization of the past or the socialist organization of the past, they can't escape it.
How did it come to have that name of Planned Parenthood? It sounds so innocuous today, so nice, something that we need, Planned Parenthood.
Well, it does, and that obviously was a part of the strategy that they had in coming up with that name. Originally, the organization was not called Planned Parenthood. It was originally, Margaret Sanger developed a newsletter called The Rebel Woman. And the Rebel Woman was a newsletter that she sold on the streets of New York in Greenwich Village, and it's espoused all kinds of radical things. For instance, Emma Goldman wrote for the Rebel Woman, and she wrote one article, for instance, entitled "In Defense of Assassination." Shortly thereafter, President McKinley was indeed assassinated, but by one of Emma Goldman's followers, by the way. So it started just as kind of a general radical left, anarchistic, socialistic rag. Later, that developed into a single clinic, which was put into a very impoverished section of New York, in Brooklyn, as a matter of fact. And Margaret Sanger used that initial clinic, which was ultimately shut down by the police for disseminating obscenity. And Margaret herself was ultimately arrested for sending obscenities and profanities through the mail. But she developed a small following, and she wanted to give a name to that small following. She named it initially the American Birth Control League. And in fact, she claimed that she coined the term birth control, and she really wanted to make that an important part of everything that they did, making that phrase very prominent. But she ran into trouble during World War II, and obviously the trouble was that as America's affections turned away from Germany, and as the realities of the Holocaust against the Jews, and the Holocaust against the Poles, and the Holocaust against the Czechs, that Nazi Germany had perpetrated, even the Holocaust, which we don't hear much about, but there was a terrible slaughter of Central European Catholics. As these things came to light, Planned Parenthood had a real, or the American Birth Control League had a real public relations problem. People began to associate the eugenicist and Nazi-like leanings of this organization with everything that was going on in Germany. So Margaret Sanger and her board did some quick backpedaling, and they said, now, how can we reposition ourselves in the marketplace of ideas, so to speak, so that we sound really innocuous and that we sound like a service to families? Well, they came up with Planned Parenthood as the name. Margaret actually resisted the name at first. She thought it sounded too mushy. She was still pretty hardcore, but reason ultimately prevailed, and it has turned out to be a very, very wise choice. There are a number of Christians today. In fact, Dr. Kennedy and I were talking about this just not too long ago. A number of Christians today who hear the phrase Planned Parenthood, and they think, you know, that's a good thing. We ought to support that. And so the name was chosen very wisely. But unfortunately, it's one of those all too common in modern America today, wolves in sheep's clothing.
Now, your book is called Grand Illusions, and one of the illusions you point to is that Planned Parenthood claims to advocate the freedom of women to choose if and when they want children without government interference. How is this really an illusion?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The truth is, Bob, from its very inception, Planned Parenthood has sought mandatory population control measures, measures carefully designed to deny women the freedom to choose and enforced by the government from above. So, for instance, over the years, it has proposed that our government implement such things as compulsory abortion for out-of-wedlock pregnancies, federal entitlement payments to encourage abortion, compulsory sterilization for those women who have already had two children, and even tax penalties for existing large families. Now, that is not the program of an organization that is pro-choice. The fact is that Planned Parenthood is the number one anti-choice organization in the world today. It was Planned Parenthood, in fact, that developed China's one-child per family policy that led to the slaughter of millions of living children inside their mother's wombs and millions more living children who had already been born. The United States just recently allowed several Chinese families to seek asylum in the United States, not for political reasons, but for reproductive reasons. One of the families was interviewed in the national media, said that she had three children killed by Chinese army guards for the sin of being born, for the crime of being born, because their family was one of the families limited to one child per family.
So women have choice as long as it goes along with the plan that Planned Parenthood has set up.
That's exactly right. And that's the only choice that they're given. It's one of those kind of 1984 George Orwell kind of choices, where newspeak becomes the rule of the day, where choice really means obedience to the system that has been implemented by Planned Parenthood. It's a frightening thing, really, when you think about what Planned Parenthood has in mind for us. I have often, just pondered what it's going to be like in China 15 years from now, when we have an entire nation, the largest nation on the face of the earth, not only in political bondage, as we have seen so clearly and vividly in our television sets in the last couple of months, but also a nation that has been psychotically reared. And by that I mean a nation that has no earthly idea, no conception of what a brother or a sister is. Can you imagine the kind of psychology of an entire nation where children are raised, where they have no conception whatsoever about how to share, how to live in community and family? Even in our families in America, where we have one child in a family, they have to grow up in a neighborhood where there are brothers and sisters. They have to go to schools where people deal and interact with brothers and sisters. But here's an entire nation where that social organism has been ripped and sundered from the fabric of the culture. That's a frightening thing. That's what Planned Parenthood wants to baptize on all of us.
Now, another illusion is how Planned Parenthood claims to serve the needs of poor women and low-income families. We talked a little about this. Their idea was not like the church to go in and help the poor people to be self-sufficient and to get out of that cycle, but instead let's just do away with them and get rid of that segment of the population. How is that an illusion? Let's talk about that a little more.
Well, it's interesting. The entire program of family limitation that Planned Parenthood has designed was designed specifically to foster an elitist program against the underclasses. For instance, and that's not a wild statement. Let me quote from Margaret Sanger. In 1922, Margaret, the founder of Planned Parenthood, chided social workers, philanthropists, and churchmen for perpetuating what she called the cruelty of charity. She argued that organized attempts to help the poor were, quote, the surest sign that our civilization has bred, is breeding, and is perpetually, constantly increasing the number of defectives, delinquents, and dependents, end quote. She went on to write that the most insidiously injurious philanthropy was maternity care given to poor women. She concluded her diatribe in this book, a very famous book, a bestseller in 1922, in fact. She concluded the diatribe by describing all those who refused to see the necessity of severely regulating the fertility of what she called the working class and the human weeds in our culture as, quote, benign imbeciles who encourage the defective and diseased elements of humanity in their reckless and irresponsible swarming and spawning. Her alternative to charity was to, quote, eliminate the stocks that she felt were most detrimental, quote, to the future of the race and to the world. That's pretty radical. What that tells us is that Planned Parenthood has always targeted minorities, the unwanted, and the disadvantaged for family limitation, contraception, abortion, and sterilization. In fact, Planned Parenthood's motto from the early days was, more children from the fit, less from the unfit. That is the chief issue of birth control.
Planned Parenthood claims that its system of birth control is safe and effective. How true is that?
Well, Planned Parenthood is now handing out birth control devices, particularly birth control pills, to teenagers all across the country like they were candy. And that's a very dangerous thing to do. A number of medical studies have shown that the birth control pills that are on the market today, which have been changed drastically from those first pills released in 1960 and approved in 1960, that even now they have questionable medical risks and of complications and effects in women's lives. Almost any woman who has ever taken the pill for any extended period of time has had had to switch prescriptions a number of times because of problems with high blood pressure or weight gain or retention of water or loss of appetite or a number of other things. Studies have shown that the pill is adversely affects the health of women when it comes to future pregnancies, when it comes to things like diabetes, even enhancement of the growth of cancer cells in the uterus and liver and the pancreas, breast cancer. So in and of themselves, birth control pills are rather dangerous, a medical procedure. It is what it is, essentially, is a recreational drug. And we need to see it as a recreational drug. When you give recreational drugs to teenagers whose bodies are developing, whose hormones are in states of transition, then you're really playing with fire and asking for disaster. And Planned Parenthood has even begun to give them to prepubescent kids. So what we're looking at is a prescription for disaster. The other interesting thing, though, is that the pill doesn't work with teenagers. The failure rate, the in-use failure rate, is 11% per annum, which means that if a teenager gets on the pill when they're a freshman in high school, they have a 68% chance of getting pregnant before they graduate. What that means is that by handing out these birth control pills and encouraging sexual activity among teenagers, Planned Parenthood is asking for more teen pregnancy.
It only makes sense that if more teens are sexually active, you're going to have more failures.
That's exactly right.
Now, they also say that they fight, Planned Parenthood does, sexually transmitted diseases. How do they go about that?
Well, Planned Parenthood has a number of educational programs. They also advocate the use of condoms as a hedge against sexually transmitted diseases. The fact is, though, that the failure rate for condoms is triple that of the pill, which we've already seen is not adequate. In addition, by going around and telling teenagers that they can escape the consequences of their sin, they are actually encouraging more sexual activity. What we're finding in a number of statistical studies, including Planned Parenthood's own studies, is that sexually transmitted disease education programs actually increase the incidence of sexually transmitted diseases. Planned Parenthood is little more than a typhoid Mary, spreading herpes simplex 3 and even AIDS among our teenagers, encouraging the spread of syphilis and gonorrhea and all of these things because they are encouraging irresponsible sexual promiscuity among these kids. They're telling the kids, as long as you have safe sex, then you're in good shape. But there's no such thing as safe sin. And when people are encouraged to try and escape the consequences of irresponsible and sinful behavior, then those consequences are only going to hit all the harder and all the more prominently. Barrier devices, such as condoms, only offer limited protection against venereal infection due to leaks and tears and breaks and slippage and overflow and incompatibility with lubricants and inconvenience. Their effectiveness has been estimated to be at best 80%, which means that 20% of the time, those kids are going out there playing with disaster. Now, if we could flip a light switch and know that only 80% of the time will we be safe from electrocution, we'd stop flipping light switches. We would say that the risks are too great. Forget it. We don't want, you know, a 20% risk of dying every time we turn on the lights. Well, we need to look at this very carefully. We have kids out there playing with loaded guns. Literally, with AIDS and herpes simplex 3 and so forth. Planned Parenthood's programs are not a prescription against sexually transmitted diseases. They're a prescription for disaster.
We know that they're in the classrooms. We've been talking a little bit. We've kind of danced around the issue. But what exactly are they teaching children in the classroom today?
Well, it's really frightening to really see what Planned Parenthood is doing. I've gone through loads of literature from Planned Parenthood groups all over the country. I've seen the curriculum that they've designed for our school districts and for individual schools. I've listened to Planned Parenthood speakers, bureau speakers in the classroom. I've heard the testimony of parents and children who have gone through the programs. And there's a whole gamut of programs. And really, we could talk for hours about the peer facilitation programs and the role-playing programs and so forth that they've got in our schools. Suffice it to say that Planned Parenthood's design is twofold. Number one, to encourage sexual fulfillment among teenagers, which means that Planned Parenthood is in our schools, in our junior highs, elementary schools, and high schools, telling kids that they need to be satisfied, not to adhere to old rules and old morality and being told what to do by their parents, but instead to seek fulfillment in whatever ways they desire. Some of the programs that I have seen have advocated everything from self-satisfaction through masturbation, but also all the way across the line to incest and bestiality and homosexuality and the full gamut. Essentially, what Planned Parenthood's programs say is, hey, just do whatever you think is right, whatever you feel like you can responsibly handle. Go ahead and do it. Be fulfilled. That's a frightening thing in and of itself. On the other hand, the Planned Parenthood's second tack is be responsible in the way you do it. Make sure you don't hurt anyone else. Be sure and be nice. Make sure that you use some sort of protective devices, condoms or pills or whatever, and be responsible in your irresponsibility. Be responsible in your bestiality. Be responsible in your incestual relationships. That is a frightening thing. The result of Planned Parenthood's sex education program has not been to reduce teen sexuality or teen sexual activity, as you might expect. It has not been to reduce sexually transmitted diseases. It has not been to reduce teen pregnancies. In fact, according to its own survey conducted in 1986 by the Lewis Harris pollsters, teens who have taken comprehensive sex education courses designed by Planned Parenthood have a 50% higher rate of sexual activity than their unenlightened peers. Bottom line of that, Bob, is that kids who have no sex education whatsoever are better off than kids who go through Planned Parenthood programs by a rate of 50%. Kids who go through a limited program of awareness and alertness, programs designed to facilitate chastity, designed to facilitate abstinence in the kids, have a 75% lower rate of sexual activity than the Planned Parenthood programs. So, for instance, when we think about the things that Eagle Forum and Concerned Women of America and Sex Respect and Josh McDowell's Why Wait program, what we're seeing is that these are being spurned by the liberal elite. They're being scoffed at by Planned Parenthood as ineffective and unproductive, but that's the only thing that's actually working out there in our schools. Planned Parenthood's programs, on the other hand, are causing disastrous results.
And how is it then that they are able to promote this illusion and keep the general population from hearing these numbers?
Well, first of all, they don't tell us the numbers. They hide the numbers. They play percentage point ping pong, which is a common game for statistical experts. And what they do is they show us that there are problems. They say, undoubtedly, they show us the real problems. We've got a crisis in the area of teen pregnancy in our schools today. We've got a crisis when it comes to sexually transmitted diseases. There are 18,000 kids every single week in the United States that are newly infected with some sort of sexually transmitted disease. That's frightening. We have kids who are wandering around spreading AIDS, spreading herpes simplex 3, spreading gonorrhea, and on and on and on. And they don't even know it. And that is a real crisis, and Planned Parenthood paints the picture of the crisis brilliantly. They play on the emotions of people, and they say, we've got to do something about it. Here's the answer, education. Well, the old lie of salvation by education or salvation by legislation just is that. It's a lie. Planned Parenthood has been perpetrating this lie, but the American people continue to fall for it. We think that if Congress will pass a law, or if the school board will initiate a program, or if the teachers will just enter into the lives of the students and fill their minds with new facts and figures, that'll take care of it. Well, it doesn't take care of it. It takes more than pumping kids full of facts in order to turn them away from crack, in order to turn them away from marijuana, in order to turn them away from irresponsible sex.
Now, let's change gears and talk for a moment about abortion. It was about a month ago I saw a report out of a nation around the world somewhere on the CNN World Report, and they were talking about how that a woman had not died in their country since abortion had become legal in 1983. Abortion is safe and legal. We hear that all the time. It's safe. Is it really?
No, it is not. Abortions may be legal, but they're not safe. Fact is, abortions are very dangerous, and Planned Parenthood's own liability release forms say so in very fine print. There is no such thing as a safe and legal abortion. Recently, the Centers for Disease Control conducted a study of maternal deaths and discovered that abortion is now the sixth most common cause in the United States. The results of the study, released in the May 1985 issue of Obstetrics and Gynecology, admitted that those abortion-related deaths were actually underreported by as much as 50%. So the numbers are a lot worse than we even think. The fact is that before abortion was legal in the United States, the number of deaths due to criminal self-inflicted abortions, back alley abortions, was somewhere between 3 and 8 per year. Even though we hear Planned Parenthood and the ACLU and others say that the numbers were 5,000, that's just not true. It's about 8. Part of the reason for that is that most abortions have always been performed by licensed physicians. The myth of the back alley is just that. It's a myth. It's a propaganda tool. The very people that were performing abortions back before 1973 are still performing those abortions. They've just moved out of the shadows and up to Main Street. Now they take MasterCard and Visa for their services. On the other hand, though the idea of a number of deaths for abortion services has been much overreported previous to 1973 and much underreported, another aspect of the whole abortion industry that has not come to the public's understanding and estimation are the physical effects that abortions inevitably bring to every woman that undergoes the surgical procedure. 25% of all the girls who get first trimester abortions are then sterile for life. 25%. About 90% of the women who go through abortion procedures, before 3 years have elapsed, have had to seek some sort of professional psychological help for what is now being called by psychological professionals as the post-abortion syndrome. 90%! Besides these kinds of risks inherent in the abortion procedure, a number of other risks have come to the fore. 20%, for instance, of all mid-trimester abortions result in serious genital tract infections. A recent study conducted by UCLA demonstrates that abortion can be a killer due to pelvic abscess, perforation of the uterus, sometimes also of the bowel. Infections, abscesses that don't prove fatal can cause pelvic inflammatory disease. A number of other medical complications include hemorrhaging. Nearly 10% of all those cases of mid-trimester abortions require transfusions. It just goes on and on and on. Abortion is a very dangerous procedure.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of deception and changing of numbers and statistics and taking what they like and don't like. I think one of the things that we need to keep in the forefront as we go over anything that deals with this whole issue is that there is a lot of money at stake behind those numbers.
It is a multi-billion dollar industry, literally. The interesting thing about that, though, is, Bob, that those billions of dollars, they come from you and me. Because the American taxpayer is footing a substantial portion of Planned Parenthood's bill. Planned Parenthood receives almost $1.25 billion a year, various levels of its organizations, from the American taxpayer, from you and me. That's a lot of your money, and that's a lot of my money. And it's frightening to realize that these programs are things that I'm paying for. In the Bible, it talks about hands stained with blood. And Isaiah tells the people that that he wants them to cease the trampling of his courts, that he is going to stop his ears to their prayers and shut his eyes to their sacrifices because there's blood on their hands. A lot of people, especially pro-lifers and Christians, think that that for those of us who are philosophically opposed to Planned Parenthood, that our conscience is clear and that our hands are clean. Not so if we pay taxes.
Well, the question as we run down, obviously there are so many other topics inside talking about Planned Parenthood that we could go over, but we are running out of time. The one question that many people would have is, well, what can I, as an American citizen, do to stop at least my part in supporting Planned Parenthood?
Well, one of the things that we've got to do immediately is sound the alarms and let the public know what Planned Parenthood is really all about. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to provide a tool for Christians to have the facts at hand. There are over 100 footnotes in every chapter. It's carefully documented so that Christians can really have the facts. This is not just a bunch of hysteria and pro-life blathering. It's evidence that we need to take to our school districts, that we need to take to our legislators, that we need to take to the media, and sound the alarms. Secondly, though, we need to not only say no to Planned Parenthood and no to abortion and no to these promiscuous sex education programs and school-based clinics. We also need to say yes to the girls in crisis, and we've got to begin to serve in our communities. The way that we can do that is to begin to volunteer and to provide money and resources and services to the various crisis pregnancy centers that are all around the country that are really struggling right now to meet the needs of girls in crisis. A second thing that we need to do is that we need to begin to get involved in the kids in our community, our own children and the children in our neighborhood, to begin to minister the hope that is Christ and Christ alone. We need to begin to sound the gospel hope all across the country and involve ourselves intimately in the lives of the people who are desperate for answers and desperate for hope. I dare say that there is some girl in a crisis pregnancy center just around the corner or just down the block or down the street somewhere from many of our listeners right now who are desperate for a word of hope, who are desperate to hear that there are alternatives to killing that child, who are desperate to know that there are people out in the world that care. If the Church of Jesus Christ is not going to be that hope, that help, that resource to the world, then our world is doomed and damned.
And I guess really the proper phrasing for the question, I think before I said, what can we do? I think all of us have to say, no, Lord, the question is, what can I do?
Amen.
What do you want me to do in this battle? And I think that's something that we need to ask ourselves on a lot of different issues.
This is an issue that people have taken to the street on, and I'm thankful for much of that. I really am. But one of the things that I find really lacking is that we're quicker to go to the streets or we're quicker to get on the phone and call our legislator than we are to fall on our face before God and say, God, use me. How should I act? How can I serve the people that are in need? We need to bombard the throne of grace as well as the Supreme Court, as well as our local legislators, as well as our congressmen and senators. We need to find a place in our daily routine to seek God's face over this issue. And only then, I think, will we find real solutions.
Ultimately, it is a spiritual battle, and only the Holy Spirit is going to change the hearts of those people who are
that's
supporting
right.
abortion.
Now, that's not to exclude all of the other, but it is to say that that we've got to look at this issue comprehensively rather than segment little bits and pieces of it.
George Grant has been our guest. Obviously, we could go on and on, George, but we do have to wrap things
yes.
up. But I do want to thank you again for the last couple of days.
Well, thank you. It's been a real joy and a privilege.
Once again, George Grant has been our guest. George's book, Grand Illusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood. God bless you and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Truths That Transform is a production of Coral Ridge Ministries. Opinions expressed by guests on the program are not necessarily those of Coral Ridge Ministries, Dr. D. James Kennedy, or this station.